Hey everybody, my name is Eric Alakowitz. I'm on the Charlotte LGBT Chamber of Commerce, and thank you all for doing this today. I appreciate it. I have a question for everybody on the panel, and I think this is really what it comes down to. When you hear the term transgender man and you hear the term transgender woman, do you see transgender men as men or transgender women as women? Because I think that will remove a lot of this misclarification with the way you look at us. Do I belong in the men's room is the question.
I don't see a difference. When I'll answer your question directly. When I look at you, I see a woman. When I look at Trey, I see a man. I don't give it a lot of thought. I don't think you are what we see you are.
So if you went back and talked to Phil Berger tomorrow, what would you say to him?
You know, I was just in trying to figure out ways to help the lawmakers fashion this. Some of the things that were expressed to me weren't where you are now, but in the transition period, it is more challenging for you to know where to go and to feel safe. And that feels accurate to you, but that can be the most challenging and the most vulnerable time. And so how do you address that in trying to craft a law?
And I think you make a really great point, and it is a central point, because the fear is about someone being somewhere they're not supposed to be. And they're only not where they're supposed to be if you don't think they're supposed to be there. So it requires, and Ned can speak to this from some of the conversations he's had with lawmakers and businesses, more understanding. And at least from my reporting, one thing that I've seen that maybe a little shred of another difference is that there are more conversations and there potentially is more room for people to understand these things better because of how much is coming up.
Can I ask you and Trey this question? Prior to Charlotte passing the ordinance that started all of this, did you see a need for that ordinance to pass?
So prior to this, I can give you some recounts of some of the things that have happened from major companies here within the Charlotte area where, take shopping, and I find a dress that I want to try on, and I am presenting female, but I'm within that range of what you had mentioned before, which I guess makes people uncomfortable. So I'm trying to live my life congruently. I don't know how to be any different. Thus, I feel, and I've always known, I should be using the woman's dressing room. I looked like a woman, but I was told the men's room is over there. Then I was ridiculed and mocked. I escalated and went to their management. Nothing happened. I can go to the police and I can ruffle feathers and I can say, you know, this is an unjust thing. But a lot of times we find that, especially for those who are not, when we use the term out, by doing those things, that outs us. And there's a lot of fear in doing that because there's a lot of infrastructure that we run the risk of losing. And that is what the non-discrimination ordinance helps to solidify in our legitimacy. We are people that are legitimate, but yet run the risk of losing our jobs, our spouses, our families, because of the lack of support, the lack of understanding. You know, you mentioned dialogues with the General Assembly. I've been reaching out to them since day one. They don't want to talk to us.
Have you ever contacted me? Have you ever contacted me, directly or indirectly?
I have talked.
Have you ever contacted me directly or indirectly?
I have lobbied and walked around that building. I've tried to get Paul Stamm. I can name names. I can
say. I understand. I'm just saying that when you say the General Assembly, I'm one of them, those people.
Right.
And no one's come to talk to me.
I know.
I'm probably the most accessible guy in the
legislature.
I would gladly come and talk to you.
Okay, fine.
But when I
okay.
enter that building, it's interesting right. how security follows me around that entire building.
Okay, and so that's an invitation. And you have said in the representative's defense that he believes there needs to be a lot more open dialogue on this and other issues. Trey, same question to you before I go back to the audience. Trey, same question to you. Did we need the ordinance?
We absolutely needed the ordinance because it's like Erica was saying, and like I said earlier, people that are mid-transition, people that can't transition, because what people don't see about the trans community, you're not seeing a man in a dress. This is a woman. And this woman she may not want to have the surgical procedure to pass, because once you've had testosterone in your system, it changes your facial structure, and people are going to be have confusion about your gender identity, and that's when the problems come up. She may not have $50,000 to have that procedure because insurance in North Carolina doesn't cover it. And then if you're talking about requiring her to have SRS, that can be upwards of $100,000 to have both of those procedures, and then she can have her birth certificate changed, and then she can go to the bathroom that she identifies with.
Over here.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
It's John Boyer. I'm a resident of Charlotte, and I'm the director of the Beckler Museum of Modern Art. And this is as much a comment as it is a question. There's been a good deal of attention paid to the $100 million attached to the NBA All-Star Game. There have been high-profile corporations who have chastised the legislature, and also others who have said they will not come to the city. But there's a whole other layer of loss, and that has to do with the cultural life here in our community. Major performers who elect not to come to the state or to Charlotte. And I can say, too, that finally yesterday we at the Beckler were affected when we learned that we were being pulled from an exhibition we were working on with other museums in the country because they did not want to be part of a show that would come to North Carolina. So I want to make sure that there's an awareness of the clamping down of intellectual and cultural discourse of the type that does attach itself to the importance of these issues. So.
Hi, my name is Raina, and I am a CMS teacher here. I teach global studies, but personally, I'm really into politics, so this is for the representative. I was wondering if we can have an actual brainstorm here right now. If you're the education guy, how are you going to reach out to public teachers to have further discussions?
Well, I do attempt to do that. I travel the state quite a bit. I don't just stay in my own district. Frankly, I'm probably chastised for not staying, being enough sufficiently centric on my own district. When I attempt to engage teachers, superintendents, principals all over the state, and am happy to do so. As I said before, I'm probably one of the most accessible guys in the legislature, and I'll go pretty much anywhere, anytime, where I can engage some people in fruitful conversation on pretty much any issue.
I teach 7th through 12th grade. I'm really busy, too. Can you reach out to us?
I'm sorry, I couldn't. Please repeat the question.
Could you repeat the question?
I know it sounds like you're saying that we should be reaching out to you because you're so accessible, but can you reach out to the teachers?
And I do. Have I been in contact with all 112,000 teachers in North Carolina? No, I have not. But I have certainly made, and I will continue to make every attempt to contact directly. I want to talk to teachers about all kinds of issues, and education, discrimination, anything else. Can I say I've reached out to you? No, I've never seen you before in my life till tonight. But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't be more than willing, and will make attempts. Yeah, I'll reach out.
Okay, let's go over here.
From Charlotte, one quick question. Has there been any discussion that anybody knows about by the people who passed the law, especially the bathroom portion, as to how it would be enforced? Was that ever discussed?
I don't know of any intensive discussions on that at all. It's like a lot of other things we do. We pass laws, tell people to do things. We don't fund them. They're unfunded mandates. We do a lot of that kind of stuff. It's ridiculous.
And Ralph, to your point, that was one of the things that, as a reporter, it was tough to figure out for a while, and that we spent some time trying to figure out is who, in fact, is enforcing this. And it, frankly, it's tough to tell.
And I think that's the hard part, too, because I think then citizens who are for HB2 that don't understand the issues that of being trans, they're trying to enforce it, and that's where we get more violence.
In the back of the house.
Hi, my name is Ty, and I live in Uptown, and I work in property management. I want to know, when I've got people coming from around the world coming to me asking me why they should live in Charlotte and take a job at Bank of America when they can get the same job in New York City, what I should say, because now I don't want to live here anymore. So what should I say to the growing number of people trying to occupy Crane City to get them to move in a city that doesn't want to keep their current occupants?
Well, I would sure draw a distinction, and I don't really want to draw the distinction I'm about to between Charlotte and the state of North Carolina. But I think Charlotte has been a remarkable city. I think it's been on the forefront of trying to advance people
until
from an inclusion standpoint.
Told that it can't, right?
And so I think you should be proud that you live in Charlotte, and I think you should be proud that Charlotte is trying to make a change and trying to make that change in a way that will affect the breadth of the state.
Charlotte was a place that passed the ordinance that was wasn't trying to do what the city leaders viewed as the right thing to do. They literally did it. That was taken away. And that's the argument that Mayor Roberts has made, and I know that Ned and others have made, which is, you know, don't punish Charlotte for doing the initial thing that then started the rest.
You know, I've been in Charlotte for over 40 years. I've seen an awful lot of change in this city. I've seen a lot of change that has made this a great place. And it's happened because people are willing to get involved and get engaged from the day that if you love this place, if you love the quality of life, if you love all the aspects about it, then get involved, have conversations. Because when I talk to my counterparts around the state who start off the conversation by, you all have lost your mind on the bathroom bill, and I have to somehow transition that to a broader conversation, one of the things I talk about is talent. And I sit there and I say to somebody who's in a county that maybe has 3 large employers and that's it. They've lost population for 20 years, they're gonna lose population for the next 10 years. And I sit there and I say, what would you do if your 3 largest employers said, the creative class is vitally important? Would you go out of your way to find an accommodation, to find a way through this bill, this legislation? And the answer is almost invariably yes. And that's when you start to turn the conversation from simply being about a bathroom to about discrimination. And those are the kind of conversations that we have to have. And to just abandon those conversations and simply to say, well, folks out there just don't understand us and they outnumber us 8-2, if I characterize Raleigh and Charlotte in it together, that's not the way forward. We wouldn't have been able to build the city to the extent that we have if we just stopped there. We've got to find our way through this, and we can find our way through it.
Yeah, but Charlotte's not the problem. Charlotte isn't the problem.
That's the arrogance, Mike, that comes so that when you talk to others around the state, they start by saying, Charlotte's always right, isn't it? And we're just dumb people from the rural parts. And that's part of the problem.
It is.
That's part of the problem, having that conversation.
All right, let's move on. I think it's over here. Is that right?
Right here.
Yeah, okay.
Hi there, my name is Pooja and I live in the NoDa area. First of all, I'd like to voice my concern that there are no people of color on this panel. And we are at the most violent intersection of being trans and queer and people of color. So, and my second part is that, as Mr. Curran just mentioned, we keep talking about the bathroom segment. Does anyone on the panel have views on any other part of HB2? And is there a way to talk about them, minimum wage raising or anything like that?
I have yet to meet the person who will admit to being the sponsor of the minimum wage element of it, and I'm told it was not enforceable at the city level anyway, so I don't even know why it was ever in the bill in the first place. From the get-go, in conversations I had, people realized from the very beginning, when I say this would be what I would characterize as not the national groups, but they knew repeal was not going to happen, and quickly it was determined that you're not going to get anything done on the bathroom bill this year, so it was all the other elements of the bill that you might be able to change. The first and most important was to restore cause of action, the ability to sue for discrimination at the state court level, which is the only thing in the end that we were able to achieve. Some modest tweaks to the bathroom, to the birth certificate provisions, some increased penalties for assaults in bathrooms that failed. There are other elements and other compromises that could have been made. And one of the other last pieces was a task force that was going to be appointed to examine discrimination across the state.
Greg, I don't know where you are, but at some point you need to find your way here because this guy's arm's going to fall off. up there.
Hey everyone, my name is Gloria Merriweather. I'm a 24-year-old black queer woman from the West Side. Essentially, what I want to do right now is really acknowledge that when Charlotte's non-discrimination ordinance was struck down the first time, one of our own community organizers, Blake Brockington, who was a black trans male living in Charlotte, 18 years old, killed himself here, right? And so when we're talking about you, sir, legislating hate, Representative Horn, from a bill that you say you haven't really read, that is despicable. We are losing people in our community because you don't want to read, and that is your job. So tell me, when I'm going to vote, when I'm going over the next, you know, however many years to do this voting, and I'm voting for people like yourself who openly admit to not reading and legislating things that you don't even know how you're going to enforce.
I don't know. Hold on, calm down. Let's keep it down. I don't think that you ever said you didn't read the bill.
I never said I didn't read the bill. I did read the bill. I acknowledge that there are nuances in the bill and legalese in the bill that I don't necessarily understand in depth, but I didn't say I didn't read the bill.
Okay.
Now, I don't, there are a lot
did
of
Did everyone read
I
the bill?
I will tell you, there are a lot of bills that I and others vote for where we don't like every piece of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
The budget's a perfect example, and that's $22 billion. That happens not just in legislative process, that happens in business. There's plenty of business things I've done that I needed to do to move my business forward, but I didn't like every piece of it.
Would there be a value, given HB2 and some of the things that have been discussed here tonight, and also with teachers, to have a legislative summit with people from the LGBTQ community so you could get to know them, understand them, hear their points of view, see what they actually look like?
There's always great value in conversation.
Could you organize that? Would you organize that?
I would join with others to organize it. I'm not going to do it all by myself. I will tell you that.
You'd want other legislators in the meeting.
I'm getting to visit the schools as it is, apparently. So I'm not doing my job already, and based on what I've heard, because I don't reach out and touch everyone. But that doesn't mean I won't give it a try.
All right. Greg.
Gregory Pizarro, I just moved to Charlotte. I just have a quick question for Representative Horn. I'm going to preface this by saying that I don't want to minimize anything from the trans community, but everybody has talked about how there's other aspects to the bill. One of them explicitly removes any workforce or employment discriminatory legislation so people can be discriminated based on their gender, their sexual orientation, any of that. So if you look at section 142-422.3, it explicitly removes any discriminatory or any legislation that protects workforce employees from discrimination. So what will you do? You talk about a lot of negative aspects of the bill, right? Deliberately talk about negative comments, but you said that you weren't sure whether or not you would vote no if you were presented the bill again. So what will you do to remove some of these other clauses in the bill that you don't agree with?
What are my options to do it? I can run if the bill would run again, which it won't run again. It's already a bill. So where do we go from here? Should be the discussion. And no, it can't be amended. We'd have to pass a new bill. The bill is signed into law. So we can't amend it. We can pass a new law that changes a law that we made, but we can't amend a law that's in place. We pass a new law. Now, there's number of things that need to be, that should always be done with probably everything. I really appreciate someone noting that there's no people of color up here. Because when we talk about discrimination, up until 4 months ago, 6 months ago, that was the issue on discrimination. And we need to ensure that we don't lose that issue in the face of other discriminatory issues. And that's a conversation that needs to be had in depth here in Charlotte and across the state and across the nation. All discrimination needs to have much more attention paid to it with a focus toward solutions, not just a focus toward complaints.
And I do want to jump in on the bill did create for the first time state protected classes. I mean, it left out gender identity, but it established sex, age, the standards of the federal government short of gender identity. Of course, it also took away the right to sue in state court, but that was something that was put back in. And the other thing to keep in mind here, too, is, you know, when we talk about these protections or the lack thereof, in this conversation at least, we're really focused at the state level. Federal civil rights law obviously applies and applies above state laws in all places across the country. And there have been several federal Employment Opportunity Commission lawsuits since the passage of HB 2 that have to do with gender identity. So there is still some way to move there. It's just only at the federal...
And the governor's executive order extended sexual orientation and gender identity to over 50,000 state employees.
Right, yeah, Governor McCrory added that to the executive branch so that gender identity is at least still covered there.
Okay. And is it not true that the federal government does not, at this point, does not extend protections in that area?
It has been very clear, especially this year after HB 2, that when it comes to employment law and when it comes to education, the federal government interprets civil rights law where it says sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity. That argument's playing out in the courts in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over here, I think. And this poor guy right here. Oh, good. Good. You snuck in there with a microphone.
Hi there. My question is for Representative Horn, and appreciate much respect for you for being here, because frankly, you don't have to be engaging in this conversation necessarily, so I do appreciate that. My question is, earlier you suggested that there were no, you named the media as the group benefiting from HB2, and then you said you didn't answer the question of whether you would vote again for that, for HB2. So I wanted to just hear your rationale of why you can't answer that question. If you seem to admit that no group but the media has benefited from the bill.
I'm trying to come up with a succinct and sensible answer. I seldom decide how I'm going to vote on a bill till the very last minute, because I'm always concerned that there's going to be information I don't know come up. I have the benefit of being the dumbest guy in the legislature. As a consequence, I can learn from everyone, and I try to do that. So I don't generally make up my mind until the last minute. It frustrates my colleagues greatly. So for me to sit here at a given moment, under these circumstances, and tell you how I'm going to vote, I'm not going to do that, and I wouldn't commit to a vote regardless of what the bill is. Because that's how I do things. I'm going to wait and listen and learn and find out how I can work with my colleagues and the public to attempt to pass good, thoughtful legislation. Am I successful at that? Heck no. But it's not for lack of effort, and I will continue that effort.
But legislators do author bills. So knowing what you know now about what's happened, knowing what you've learned from this conversation and others I'm sure that will ensue from this, when the legislature comes back in session, would you entertain the thought of authoring a bill that reverses some of this, or if not all of it?
Well, the direct answer is probably not, but I need to explain that. And the explanation is, I carry a pretty heavy load on education.
Okay.
And I am not going to be everyone's knight on a white horse. I can't champion every issue.
Okay.
That doesn't mean I don't take an interest in them. That doesn't mean I don't have input to them. But if I get off on this one, then I'm going to lose then I'm not going to have the time, because it takes, I don't know about anybody else, but I've only been able to get 24 hours in my day. And I don't sleep not much as it is. So, no, I wouldn't be championing the legislation. Would I be supportive? Let me see what we're talking about. Let's discuss it. Let's come up with a reasonable approach that makes good sense, and then move from there. But I'm going to focus on where I presently have a knowledge base.
Okay. Over here.
Hi, my name is Catherine Mahan, and I live in Charlotte. Representative Horn, like others here, I really appreciate the fact that you are in a dialogue. But what you just said is that if I get kicked out of an apartment because I'm gay, or if I lose my job because I'm gay, you can't be bothered with that.
That's not what I said at all.
I don't think it's what you meant to say. I really genuinely don't believe that it's what you meant to say. But the fact that LGBT discrimination is alive and well, particularly in your home district, where there are many, many stories you never hear because there's no listening for that story. There's tremendous loss and tremendous cost. And when you say, I genuinely don't want anyone to be abused or victimized. I believe that you believe that. I believe that is sincere. But you're missing the point that there are a lot of people in the world who are not like you, who are looking for permission, who are looking to be right and make other people wrong, who are afraid. And the Republicans just adopted the most anti-LGBT platform in 100 years at their convention last week. So we cannot afford to be naive about these things. There are real costs. The bill must be repealed. There's no way to fix it. And it needs to be repealed for LGBT people, for minimum wage issues, for the fact that it was done under cover of night without public debate. There, all of those are reasons that it absolutely must be repealed.
Where are we going next? Over here. Okay.
How you doing? My name is Travis Brown. I'm just here pretty much. I'm a straight male, married, and I have nothing against LGBT community using bathrooms and none of that. I'm just here to represent the people who's been in that arena. Charlotte Hornets, used to be the Bobcats, been in there for 10 years. And personally, I'm speaking for everyone who's been dedicated like me. The All-Star Weekend getting removed is very personal because we've been through a painful 10 years in there. And we feel like we finally won something for sticking it out. So the game being removed is... It hurts more than it might to the average person. I just wanted to put that out.
Okay. Back of the house.
My name is Jim Quick. I'm from Concord. I have a question for Ned. I'm a white guy, so I'm not going to understand civil rights from an African-American perspective or trans or LGBT. However, I know that it took 14 years to pass civil rights legislation in America. So while you were working with the chamber and working with two opposite sides, why was it so difficult to achieve consensus or compromise to give some rights to trans people, but also acknowledge privacy? Why was it that our legislature, our business community, and others, even the LGBT community, would not take small steps towards progress, and everybody wants all or nothing?
It's a great question. And I'll tell you, I think I ask myself that question every day for about 100 days. I think it's a bigger issue than North Carolina. It's a bigger issue than Charlotte. I think the fact that this is a swing state, I think the fact that there are politics on the right and the left that are at play here, put pressure on the people who make the laws to fashion compromises. One-on-one, great opportunities for compromise. People in leadership, the House and the Senate, governor, all working to find ways to modify the law, not for the immediacy of some of the folks here that would want to have change happen overnight, which would be wonderful, but in the reality that's not really the sphere that we work in. It's a huge, huge personal disappointment that it did not work out and that all we got at the end of the day was restoration of cause of action and that we lost the All-Star game. And it means we have a lot of work to do, and it means it's a much bigger issue than just HB2 for where we are.
I have time for two more questions and then we have to abandon the ship here. Go ahead over here.
Hi, my name is Jane Campbell, and I'm from Davidson, and I am now running for the North Carolina House against one of the sponsors of HB2. And for Representative Horn, you want to look forward, so I'm asking if you're willing to pledge tonight that instead of when legislation comes forward that has been presented over a matter of 12 hours, you even brought up the fact that there is little discussion on the budget. Are you willing to say now that you will have that discussion, bipartisan discussion, and input from the citizens of North Carolina before you vote on a bill like this in the next time?
If I'm willing to have a discussion. I prefer a discussion on every issue. I ask you to understand, if, let's say you're successful in the legislature, how it works. I don't have I'm not in a position to call for discussion. I don't get to choose when something's put on the agenda for a vote or a lot of those things. So for me to commit to anything, it would be disingenuous in my opinion, because I can't make that commitment. I can't deliver. I'm going to hope that my reputation in the legislature and with the people that know me certainly understand that I go looking for people that don't agree with me. I'm going to learn a lot more from them than I ever learned from the people that do agree with me. I look for opportunities to engage people so I can learn more about it. But I don't make promises, pledges, or commitments because I don't know. I'm not a soothsayer. I can't tell you what I can deliver on. But I can't promise outcomes, but I can promise effort. And I promise effort.
And who gets the final word? Over here.
Hi, my name is Alex Brookins, and I am a trans man of color who recently graduated from a CMS high school. My question is, in light of Superintendent Ann Clark's recent change of CMS policies for transgender students, so Ann Clark actually personally reached out to me and my school's GSA and had a brainstorming session with us before she even told anyone in the media that they were going to change CMS policies. And there was a lot of background information that was added into this policy change. So if an entire school district can form an entire new set of rules for transgender students, how is it that that sort of commitment to information was not put into a bill that took away an entire group's civil rights?
I think that was a statement more than it was a question.
Yes. I'm not sure. Is that a statement or a question? Do you want an answer from somebody?
I would be fine. I would take an answer to that if you have discussion about it.
If I had an answer, I'd be happy to give you one.
Representative Horne's been having to do a lot of heavy lifting here, and obviously there are no other Republican lawmakers up here. So as someone who covers the legislature some, I can tell you that, generally speaking, the most controversial things pass in the shortest time frames and usually at the end of the session. This happened to be a one-day session, so it was, so to speak, the worst example of something moving really quickly. But major changes to North Carolina's voting laws changed it in like 2 days during the last session 2 years ago. Generally speaking, this is just, and it's not just North Carolina, and it's not just the Republicans. The Democrats did it too with redistricting. Generally speaking, legislatures tend to cram stuff through that may be controversial in short time frames, and it's partly because the people don't show up when those things happen quickly. So one of the things that folks can do if they feel so inclined is try to apply some pressure when there are things that change that fast.
I'll just, kind of in addressing that, getting feedback is critically important. And the person who was talking earlier about changing rooms, you know, if you think about the American with Disabilities Act, you think about something that compelled physical changes to structures that impacted the building code. I'm a developer by trade. The bathroom provision is beyond bathroom. It's locker rooms. It's shower facilities. And we all say at some point the federal government is going to resolve this through the court system. Well, they may mandate something, but it will take years to figure out how to actually implement this, and it will take many, many reforms. And so there's going to need to be feedback on how this happens. And if you think about it, if I'm developing a 100,000-square-foot building, putting a unisex bathroom in that's not that big a deal. What if I'm only developing a 5,000-square-foot building? How much does that change things? And so these are things that over the next decade plus we will be living through as we see these things come into play, to find that comfort zone, to find that place where you can feel respect throughout your life.
I want to thank you all for coming, and we particularly want to thank you for keeping this civil, because it's a very passionate discussion and people have great stakes in this issue, so thank you for that. And I also want to thank Representative Horne for being here, because he was very concerned that this would devolve into a name-calling, shouting session, and his goal in being here was to have a polite discussion, and I think
we did achieve that. Mike, I got to tell you that I'm really impressed with everyone in the audience insofar as participation, paying attention when you nod or shake your head. This is how 250 years, 6 years ago, we formed a participatory system. Unfortunately, too many people are not participating. That's how we hold people like me accountable. I can't represent you the way you want to be represented if you don't talk to me. Or if you only talk to me when there's a bulldozer in your front yard or your particular issue is on the front. We need more people. You don't just show up on that first Tuesday or second Tuesday in November and stick a little I voted button and say, I participated. No, that's not participation. So thank you all for your cordiality and for being here and participating. It means a lot to me. Let's keep it up.